From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, the barrel blame game. Where's the accountability for this botched response to the latest storm disaster to hit Houston?
Right now, there are a lot of Texans who are really disappointed in Governor Abbott for not being on the job as they see it while you have this disaster playing out in the Houston region.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Early Monday morning, Beryl made landfall near Matagorda as a Cat 1 hurricane, with the east side of the eye wall impacting Brazoria County. As Beryl tracked into Texas, Houston was directly impacted by Beryl's eye wall. More than 2.7 million people lost their power. Over 8 inches of rain fell in and around Houston. On Friday, over a million people are still without power. CenterPoint, the electric utility, announced it plans to restore power to 80% of its customers by the end of the day on Sunday. But there's been another barrel-related disturbance, a storm of finger-pointing. Who is to blame for the slow response to help the impacted people of Houston? Typically, during a natural disaster, Texas leaders have stood shoulder to shoulder at press conferences. They put politics to the side, and they work to save lives. But that's not what we're seeing today in Houston post-Beryl. I spoke to Scott Braddock about this. Braddock is the editor of the Quorum Report and the co-host of the Texas Take podcast with the Houston Chronicle. He said there is no excuse for Governor Greg Abbott not to be in Texas during this disaster.
We had the governor basically skip the country and go to Asia on a pre-planned trip that has to do with economic development, when in past administrations, that never would have happened before. Governor Perry would not have left the state with a hurricane in the Gulf of Mexico. Same thing for Governor George W. Bush. I'm naming the two of those, specifically to say that, to your point, politics should have nothing to do with this. Those are both Republican governors who understood that the state needs a steady hand during hurricane. This is the largest kind of a natural disaster that we get with frequency in Texas. When you sign up to run for governor, you don't go there to be the guy who oversees disasters. But as in the case of a lot of things, it ends up being what you're judged for. And right now, there are a lot of Texans who are really disappointed in Governor Abbott for not being on the job as they see it while you have this disaster playing out in the Houston region.
As you mentioned, Rick Perry, he really understood the benefit of him being present and visible during natural disasters. He played that role very well. It helped build his public stature as someone who was in command of Texas and was taking care of Texas. We saw something completely different with Greg Abbott. He said, well, I had this pre-planned trip to Southeast Asia, looking, inspecting these computer chip manufacturing facilities. Has he defended that? Has he explained why he didn't change his plans?
He really hasn't. As far as his public statements, what Abbott has done is he's been on defense when certain things have been called out. And you're right that Governor Perry probably would have turned the plane around if they were on their way to Asia and Governor Perry learned that there was a hurricane entering the Gulf of Mexico. And I'll give you an example. From Perry's time in office in 2008, he was scheduled to be one of the big movers and shakers hosting people at the RNC, which, of course, is starting next week in Milwaukee this year. But in 2008, Governor Perry canceled his plans. He stayed here in Texas because of Hurricane Gustav, which some of your listeners might remember. That hurricane ended up not hitting Texas, but the governor saw it as too much of a risk to not be in this state when coast of the state was under threat from a hurricane. But with Abbott, not only has he not really explained why he went ahead and did that and went to Asia instead on this pre-planned trip, it would be kind of like if you had planned a luxury vacation, and he's going to say it's a business trip, but it'd be kind of like if you had planned a big business trip somewhere and you have an elderly relative, say your mother or father, who lives right up the street, and they had a heart attack on the same day you were supposed to leave, and you just went on your trip anyway instead of going with them to the hospital. That's what I would compare it to. As far as the governance of the state during this, I've seen a lot of people ask this question. What is it that would be different if he was physically here? And it's a fair question because we have cell phones and internet. People should be able to stay in contact wherever they are. But in every previous hurricane in which Governor Abbott has been here in Texas, which that would be all of them, including Hurricanes Harvey and Hannah, go all the way back to when Perry was in office, Hurricane Ike, for example. In all of those, disaster relief from the federal government was requested by the governor on the day before the storm made landfall. But that didn't happen this week with Hurricane Beryl. Instead, you had the request coming from the acting governor, Dan Patrick, on the day after the landfall in Houston. Why is that important? Well, because, you know, federal assistance coming from Washington to a state that's been impacted by a hurricane, it takes a while for it to get here. And so you want to ask for it as soon as possible. Now, Governor Abbott and Patrick, they've been trying to spin this and say, well, it doesn't really matter because, you know, usually it takes 16 days or so for those kind of requests to even get a response, and you really start to see the feds step in. But in my estimation, that would just make the case, David, that you would make the request as soon as possible. And it seems like, you know, the governor in the situation, well, he skipped the country. So the acting governor, Patrick, simply dropped the ball. And in my estimation, you know, some people have tried to criticized Patrick for that, and he lashed out angrily at the media this week. But I think that Abbott kind of hung Patrick out to dry by not giving him that checklist of things the office of the governor needs to do as the hurricane is approaching.
Well, that's the difference between experience and inexperience. So when Governor Abbott left Texas to go to this business trip, beyond the cosmetics and the appearances that Abbott abandoned Texas in its time of need, we had the practical problem of we had Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who was the acting governor. He had all the powers and the responsibilities of the governor at that time, but he didn't have this experience in dealing with these massive natural disasters. And apparently he didn't understand that you could request this disaster aid before landfall. And even the head of FEMA is saying that this is typical, that you don't wait. You can request before natural disasters hit. And then as you do your assessments, you can modify your FEMA request for assistance. And they could have moved in generators, and they could have moved in lots of resources earlier. But this whole thing about a Biden phone call that that they're trying to make a big deal about. So Biden couldn't call Patrick, they couldn't track him down. Abbott is saying that, well, he had my phone number. Why didn't he call me? Because you weren't governor at the time. You were an out-of-country businessman at the time. Is that the answer?
Folks might have noticed that President Biden is, number one, sort of struggling for his political career right now with all these questions about whether he's fit for office. And that's a debate for a different day. He's also running the free world. So I bring those things up to say this. Maybe he's a little too busy. He's got a lot on his plate right now. He doesn't really need to be calling a whole bunch of numbers to try to find the governor of Texas who ought to be in Texas during a hurricane. The president called the newsroom at the Houston Chronicle and told them as much. He said that he had had a hard time tracking down Governor Abbott. And then, of course, there was a back and forth between Abbott and the White House. And of course, Lieutenant Governor Patrick couldn't help himself. He felt like he had to have the last word. And he spent a lot of time at a news conference, at least a solid half hour, trying to talk about his interaction with the president and set the record straight as far as he's concerned. But look, the governor is the one who skipped the state, who skipped the country, and went somewhere else during a disaster. That allows the president to even say that. And you have to imagine that the way that the governor has been criticizing President Biden in this administration for years at this point, always talking about Biden being weak on this, weak on that. Usually it's an interview about the border on Fox News Channel or on Newsmax. You have to believe that the Biden team was probably waiting for Governor Abbott to make a misstep, to really mess up and be vulnerable in a situation. And it looks like Abbott made himself pretty vulnerable by doing something that no governor has ever done before, which is leave the state, skip the country at a time when there was a threat imminent to the Texas coast.
They're also trying to blame Harris County County Judge Lena Hidalgo that she didn't put in her request for aid in time, although she has documents that show that she did put in her request the day before landfall. There is a historic rift between Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick and County Judge Hidalgo. Going back years when there was the funeral for a fallen officer, and Patrick was very, very rude to her, and they haven't spoken since. So the pettiness of all of that seems to be getting in the way of Dan Patrick being able to work with Hidalgo on providing support for people in distress right now.
It really does. And, you know, I have to tell you that my assessment of Patrick's performance until that started to happen, until the pettiness that you're talking about started to happen, and this petty back and forth with President Biden, prior to that, I was thinking that Patrick was doing a pretty solid job in the position of acting as governor when Abbott skipped the country. But of course, Patrick always has to have the last word. You know, he spent, you know, like I said, about a half hour of a press conference the other day in Houston, trying to explain that he was right and they were wrong when it came to this petty back and forth. When all anybody who was able to tune into that news conference, all they really wanted to know, David, was when is the electricity going to come back on? You had millions of you know, customers in Southeast Texas without air conditioning for 4 or 5 days. Some of them still won't have their power fully restored until probably into next week, and maybe longer in some cases because of some problems with infrastructure and the wind knocking down trees and all of that. I think to go right back to what we were saying earlier about, you know, with the time when Governor Perry was in office, if there were questions back and forth about exactly when a disaster declaration would be declared, I'm here to tell you, this is just my educated guess because I covered all these guys, David. Rick Perry probably would have said, you know, that declaration stuff, that's the kind of thing that's going to work itself out in the wash. That comes out in the wash. Right now, we got to get people's electricity back on, and that's what we're focused on. And that's the kind of thing that folks would see as real leadership when there's a problem right in front of them. And you have the governor there to be one of those people who's working actively to fix it. That's what Texans want to see when there's a disaster.
But they're having these press conferences, and we have the mayor, who is the former Texas Senator John Whitmire, who is a Democrat, and standing with Dan Patrick. And then they're basically in these press conferences blaming CenterPoint, the private electricity provider for the area, for the fact that the lights are not on at the time. Typically, you would have the county judge at these press conferences. So is that a problem?
Absolutely. There's so much pettiness at the local level, at the state level, with Patrick feuding with Hidalgo, and at the local level with Whitmire feuding with Hidalgo. She plays her own role in this, of course. She and Whitmire have not gotten along at all since he's been elected as mayor. They're both Democrats, as you said, but they're very different kind of Democrats. Whitmire, very more old school, someone who's more in line with Republicans on quite a few things, and Hidalgo is not. But I think that for both of them, and for Lieutenant Governor Patrick and Governor Abbott, for that matter, all of them should be able to set their pettiness aside whenever there is a natural disaster playing out, and millions of their constituents don't have electricity. You know, folks don't care about who slighted who, you know, 6 months ago over something that has nothing to do with what's happening right now.
So Whitmire, he's been mayor since January 1st of this year, so 7 months he's been mayor. He's talking a lot about, I didn't create these problems, I inherited these problems. The fact that the infrastructure is failing, that generators at fire stations aren't working or they don't have backup, complaining about how the Houston Astros, they have electricity at their stadium, but these emergency places don't. I mean, he's very firm in blaming other people for what's going on in Houston.
Yeah, as a new mayor, you might be able to get away with that for a little while. People might give him some kind of a grace period. But during a hurricane, folks don't really care about that. You know, I mean, and by the way, on that accusation that the Astros stadium power was on, but a facility that could be used as a shelter that they didn't have power over there at the George R. Brown Convention Center, it turned out from all the reporting I saw that Whitmire was just wrong, that the power was on for both facilities, and there was just some events happening at that that potential shelter. And so, look, you can't do that for too long. You know, as I said earlier in the interview, you run for office hoping to do certain things. One of them is not, you know, being the person to blame and being in charge during a natural disaster. But these offices come with that, and the people who run for those offices know that. Governor Abbott knew that. When he ran for governor, Lena Hidalgo, as the county judge, knew that emergency operations are, you know, under the purview of the office of the county judge in those big counties, and everywhere. But particularly, it's important in those big counties like Harris and Bexar County and places like that. And so, and Whitmire, as the mayor of Houston, It may be that he wanted to be known for other things, other policy initiatives, and he certainly disagrees with the previous administration there, the administration of former Mayor Sylvester Turner, but he may be known as a disaster mayor, and he may be judged going forward on how he responded in the situation when so many of his constituents are suffering.
Covering other disasters, you frequently hear this one phrase that all Texas disasters are local in the sense that they all run through the local county judge's office, that they are the person who is seen as the top administrator in trying to deal right. with the disaster and marshal the response. Cutting out Lena Hidalgo, is that going to hurt the residents in getting relief?
Well, the fact that they're not cooperating will do that. Look, I remember when there were in Houston, and I covered, many years ago, the responses to hurricanes Katrina and Rita. These were giant storms pointed at the Texas coast 19 years ago. And at the time, you had leadership, of course, that was, bipartisan leadership from Governor Perry, who's a Republican, Bill White at the time, a Democratic mayor in Houston. You had Republican county judges in Harris County in Houston at that time. You had Robert Eccles, who was a Republican, followed by Ed Emmett, who was a Republican. And I have to tell you, David, that during those times, it did seem that, and Perry and Bill White are a perfect example, because they ended up later running against each other for governor as the Republican and Democratic nominees. But when the hurricane came ashore that year, when there were tropical systems threatening their constituents, they set all the politics aside and they worked hand in glove. And I can just remember watching what the results were like in a disaster response when local, state, and federal were working in tight coordination to try to serve people. I mean, this time around, there were millions of people sitting in their own homes without electricity. And 20 years ago, the local, state, and federal governments were able to coordinate a response in Houston that included taking care of hundreds of thousands of people who weren't even from Texas, people who had evacuated from Louisiana. So it's not like we're not up to these challenges in this state and in that region. It's just that people really do need to set their pettiness aside. And now some of it, as you say, is intra-party, where you have someone like Hidalgo and Whitmer, who are, at least on paper, they're both Democrats, but it seems like they really hate each other. And it seems like that impacts how they do their jobs.
So Greg Abbott's calling for an investigation into how CenterPoint is responding to this catastrophe, that CenterPoint, the private power provider for the area, did not have resources staged nearby as the barrel was coming closer to the Houston area, and they have been slow to bring the power back on. However, Texas regulates these private power companies or deregulates them, as depending on your point of view. How much is this the problem of the Public Utility Commission and how we have given these private power providers carte blanche to do as they want?
Not only is it that they have carte blanche, but these are in the case of CenterPoint, these are sometimes government mandated monopolies in the Houston region. If you are someone who has a home or a business, you use electricity, you're dealing with CenterPoint. And so, CenterPoint was asked to answer some questions before the Public Utility Commission this past week about their disaster response. They said they were working as hard as they could to get everything turned back on. Actually, by the numbers, it looked like once they were able to get up and get rolling, get everything staged and get in there and really start to turn people's power back on, they were moving pretty quickly, David. Of course, that was with a lot of public pressure coming to bear. That's another reason that, things are... things are really reliant on having strong leadership, from someone like Governor Abbott. But I think it's interesting that there was a CenterPoint vice president who was scheduled to go on the trip to Asia with Abbott, and that person decided it was too much of a risk to leave. They canceled while the governor and others headed on to Taiwan and to Japan and to South Korea on this tour of Asia. The CenterPoint executive, who had been scheduled to be with them, decided that the real place he was needed was back in Southeast Texas, and so he stayed.
We saw the forecast for barrel, and of course, it changed a lot. The spaghetti models, you know, all the lines that the different forecasts that they have didn't really have it going straight into the Houston or Matagorda Bay, where it eventually took landfall until less than 10 hours before landfall. But the cone of uncertainty had Houston in there consistently, I would say.
Yeah,
he's going back 48 hours. To claim that they didn't know that Houston was going to be hit so hard and that the forecast models are to blame, does that hold water?
Well, no, it doesn't. I mean, if you look at the forecast tracks going back to last Saturday, which would be July 6th, as of about 10:30 a.m., the forecast track was moving north of the valley. There was a question originally about whether the storm might hit northern Mexico or South Texas. But by midday on Saturday, folks knew that this thing was pointed further north, and you couldn't have drawn a straighter line to Houston by the time the forecast models had been updated on Sunday going into Monday. And so, no, it doesn't hold water, the idea that they didn't know that it was going to hit a major population center. But I would say, in a lot of ways, that's not really what's at issue. The question is whether any of Texas would have been hit, which is always a possibility when a tropical system moves into the Gulf of Mexico.
Scott Braddock is the editor of the Quorum Report and the co-host of the Texas Take podcast with the Houston Chronicle. Hurricane Beryl was the first storm to make landfall in the U.S. this hurricane season, which runs to the end of November. Claudia Benitez Nelson is a climate scientist at the University of South Carolina who specializes in climate change. She says Texas needs to prepare for more powerful storms like Beryl, and she's part of a group called Science Moms.
We have kids, and we, you know, really are passionate about communicating the work that we do to others and trying to make sure that we have an earth that supports our children as they grow up.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. Well, let's talk about Beryl.
Right. Yes.
Now, Houston, so we're talking about a lot of people. And there's a lot of blame game going on right now among people in Houston saying, oh, we didn't know there was a hurricane that was going to hit this city that always gets hit by hurricanes. What is the first lesson that you want people to learn from Beryl?
Be prepared. This is not going to be a easy season. Hurricanes we're going to have more of them likely to have more of them this summer. They're going to be more powerful. And so get ready for flooded streets, for down power lines, and make sure you're as prepared as you can be for these kinds of weather events. They're the new normal.
What's so different about Beryl?
Well, I think what's different about Beryl, I should say, is I don't know that Beryl is so different from hurricanes we've had in the past. Other than that, it is just the start. I mean, it is big. It is large. Even though it is a Category 1, which, you know, is lower than Categories 2, 3, 4, and 5, that doesn't mean that we can discount it. It dumps a huge amount of rain. And when these hurricanes are moving, if they're slow and ponderous, it means that they spend a lot more time, you know, over the city. And that just means way more rainfall, way more, you know, time to get exposed to that wind. And so Beryl is really just the start of the hurricane season. And this will just be the first of likely many storms that are coming through.
Now, Houston isn't just dealing with Beryl. They were still picking up the pieces from the derecho winds that had hit the area weeks ago. And then we had Alberto also weeks ago.
Our planet's warming. It doesn't seem like a lot when you only have, you know, 1.5 or 2 degrees, but that small temperature is really enough to fundamentally change how our ecosystems are operating. When those water temperatures, right, are increasing in temperature and out into the Caribbean Sea, that's the source of energy that's coming to these hurricanes. And as you increase water temperature, those hurricanes are like, great, way more energy. And so it's setting up the system for them to to grow. And yeah, so this is our new normal.
And we're still early in the season. So how much
season? Oh, we are so early in the season.
So if this is the preview, it's hard to tell. I mean, I don't want to be an alarmist and saying it's early in the season, therefore we will have more. We just don't, we don't know.
But what we can do is we can look at kind of past history about what are the conditions that are needed to kind of set up for these hurricanes. What can we expect? And, you know, NOAA's come out, they've run all the models, they've looked at the weather, they've looked at the rising temperatures. Again, you know, we're beating records right and left. And they're like, yep, there it is. We are setting ourselves up for a very active hurricane season. And when these hurricanes come in, they are bigger and they are stronger. They are going to cause more damage.
The sequence of events for the folks in Houston, they had a barrel come in. It knocked out the power from a center point, the local private power provider. And then they got this extreme heat, temperatures over 100 degrees day after day, people not having air conditioning or refrigeration and just trying to survive now. So when we think about the hurricane, we have to also consider this part of the disaster.
Yes. And I think that's something that we, you know, we focus on the hurricane event, you know, we have the hurricane, but this is occurring during a time where we're breaking our temperatures. I mean, it is hot outside, right? No one wants to go outside right now. And so now compound that with an event that knocks out your access to water, that knocks out your access to power that was keeping you cool, right? I mean, these are compounding events that are making the situation a lot worse.
They're telling us we have to focus on adapting to climate change. Resiliency, fortifying our infrastructure. I mean, is that the only thing we can do right now?
I think we have to do everything. Right? We have to make some really strong decisions about where we're going to build along our coastlines. We know that sea level is rising. So, you know, compound sea level rising that's happening every day with an event like a hurricane that causes a lot of coastal flooding. We need to all of us need to get on board and we need to do everything we can. So absolutely, we need to stop throwing greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. We need to think about all the sustainable solutions that we can from a power perspective, be it solar, be it wind. At the same time, we need to think about where we're building, the types of houses that we're building, how close to the beach we're moving, you know, these structures. We need to think about putting our power lines in a different way so they're not above ground. Sometimes that's not possible, you know, so they're not getting knocked down. I mean, this is an all hands on deck kind of conversation. And I will say that individuals aren't going to be able to do this. Like me as a person, you as a person, you know, we can do the best that we can. We really have to all do this together. It has to be collective. It has to be something that we say as a priority to our, you know, our city government, to our regional government, to our state government, say, hey, we need you to really invest in these spaces because it is only going to get worse if we don't do something now.
Claudia Benitez-Nelson is a climate scientist at the University of South Carolina. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. Email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past episodes of Texas Matters programs on our website at tpr.org, and you can download us wherever you find cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.